This Wednesday, a bust of Václav Havel will be unveiled at Ireland's Dáil, or Parliament, making him the first non-Irishman recognised in this way. The man behind the move is barrister Bill Shipsey. The founder of Art for Amnesty, he also raised funding for a tapestry in the late Czech president's honour at the then freshly renamed Václav Havel Airport Prague, and brought the first Havel's Place memorial in Europe to Dublin's St. Patrick's Park. When I spoke to Bill Shipsey recently, he told me his interest in Václav Havel went all the way back to 1977. He had just joined Amnesty International, and the then dissident was his first case.
The work at that stage, in the first time Havel went to prison, was when he attended the trial of the Plastic People of the Universe, and he was adopted by Amnesty International as a prisoner of conscience, and he was one of the prisoners that my group worked on trying to secure his release.
What form did that take? Was it letter writing?
Letter writing, yeah.
Would the Czechoslovak communist authorities have reacted in any way, or did you guys ever get any feedback in any sense from Prague?
Well, not from the authorities, but that was not uncommon in terms of the letters that you wrote. But we knew from the prisoners' families, because sometimes you would write to the prison authorities, sometimes you'd write to the families, that it was enormously important to the families that people outside of their own country were taking notice. And also, I mean, it's not just as an end in itself, but Amnesty has been successful. We know that prisoners have been released. And we also know that by doing that, it prevents or makes it much more difficult for governments to act with impunity. They can't just forget about that prisoner. And when I read about the wonderful poets in under Stalin's Russia, people like Marina Tsvetaeva, who spent a lot of time in Prague, when I read about Ossip Mandelstam, in particular, who was imprisoned and sent to the gulags, they would have benefited so much from an Amnesty International in the 1930s, somebody to say to the Soviet government or to say to whatever government that were imprisoning prisoners of conscience, we know they're there, we care about them, and you've got to respect their rights.
How was it when you, many years later, met Mr. Havel, who had been your case and a kind of abstract figure, I guess, on paper, and then you met the guy?
It was in 2003, and in 2002 I founded Art for Amnesty, and I founded Art for Amnesty to allow artists to give voice to their support for Amnesty International. And one of the ideas I had initially was that Art for Amnesty should be celebratory, because a lot of the work of Amnesty is very difficult and tough. It's very, you know, hard and depressing. But I wanted also to create a space for celebration within Amnesty. And that's where I came up with the idea to have the Ambassador of Conscience Award. And in my mind's eye, when I was thinking of the Ambassador of Conscience Award, there was only one person I was thinking of, and that was Václav Havel.
Why Havel?
I have a number of, I suppose, heroes in my pantheon of gods, people like Gandhi, people like Martin Luther King. But for me, actually, Havel feels sort of closer to my ideal. Havel is the person I would like to be on my best day. And he not only was courageous in the face of oppression and in the face of being sort of sent to prison, but he was articulate and he was a great writer, he was a great thinker, and he was able to articulate what it means and the importance of human rights in a very sort of tangible way. I mean, I think his essay, The Power of the Powerless, is probably the greatest human rights essay or text that was ever written. It's the greatest sort of manifestation of somebody standing up against seemingly insuperable powers, but dismantling them by the power of the pen and the power of words.
And how was it then when you actually met?
Very often in life, your heroes never quite match up. You tend to idealize people in your mind, but in the case of Havel, he was greater than I had imagined. We had difficulty in communicating in that I don't speak Czech, and his English was better than I think he let on, but he wasn't comfortable in English. But it actually didn't matter. Through the limited English that he had and through gesture and just the aura of goodness and humility around the man was something exceptional. And then we met in July of 2003. It coincided with one of the Rolling Stones concerts in Letna Park that day. And then in November 2003, he flew to Dublin to accept the award at the hand of Seamus Heaney.
And Heaney had also inspired the award in the first place?
Yes. Well, Heaney wrote a poem at our request 30 years ago, 1985, 10 years before he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. But in 1985, he initially said no and then said yes to writing a poem, because he wasn't a poets generally don't write to order, and Heaney certainly didn't write to order, but he wrote this marvellous poem called From the Republic of Conscience, in which he imagined this I suppose, utopian republic, and one of the aspects of it towards the end of the poem, when he described this republic, he said their embassies were everywhere but operated independently, but that none of their ambassadors would ever be relieved. So I had the idea that we would create this award within Amnesty called an Ambassador of Conscience, and in a sense they never got relieved, they were ambassadors for life.
And tell us about when Havel actually came to Dublin to accept the prize. How did that go?
Well, the first night that he arrived, it was late in the evening, picked him up from the airport. I think Dagmar, who was travelling with him, was tired. He dropped her at the hotel. And the first thing we did was we went to the U2 studio. And Bono and Edge were recording what was the Vertigo album at that time. And Bono had lost his father about a year before that. And he had written a song called Sometimes You Can't Make It On Your Own. And he and Edge played it for Havel. And Guinness was produced from somewhere in the U2 studio. And we sat drinking. And then we went to a late night bar. And I remember being a little bit worried about 3 o'clock in the morning when we were still in this bar, which shouldn't have remained open. And I didn't want the former president of Czechoslovakia and the Czech Republic to be arrested in Dublin on my watch. But somehow we managed to get out of the pub and home safely.
What kind of communication was there between Havel and U2? Was he a U2 fan, or were they clearly fans of his?
Well, Bono and Edge were huge fans. Bono tells a lovely story that once he went to a Forum 2000 meeting in Prague, and for some reason, through some mix-up, Bono wasn't on the official list or wasn't on the official table. But what President Havel did was he came in arm in arm with Bono and made sure that he got seated at it. And Bono never sort of forget that, just that sort of kind, thoughtful gesture. But they were hugely respectful of him and huge admirers of him. And then when he died in December 2012, and my friend Peter Sis did this beautiful drawing called Flying Man, which appeared in Hospodarski Noviny, I had the idea that we would honour him with the tapestry. And I know, Ian, you were along at that dedication ceremony a year later in 2013, but the first two people to step up to the plate to want to fund that were Bono and Edge.
How did you become aware of that drawing by Petr Sis? How did you choose that, and how did the whole process go of having the tapestry made?
The drawing was beautiful. I'm a friend of Petr Sis, has been my friend and a friend of Amnesty for 10 or 12 years. And I just really admired it. And at the time then, the campaign started to rename Prague Airport in his honour. And it was actually spectacularly successful in that he died in December, and by March, the government had decided to rename it. And then I had the idea, because an Irish artist, Louis Le Brocque, a big supporter, had these beautiful tapestries made in Aubusson. It's also where Picasso's Guernica, the painting, was also made into a tapestry. And I thought one of the ways to keep pressure on the government and to keep pressure not to change their decision, because decisions can be changed, was to tell them that we were going to honour them with this giant tapestry. I mean, this is almost $100,000 worth of art, and I felt that if we committed to doing that, it might make it a little bit more difficult for them to change their minds.
Tell us about your involvement in the Havel's Places, the series of two seats and a table and a bench with a linden tree growing through it. The first one in Europe, I believe, was unveiled here in Dublin.
Human Rights Day in fact, I can't remember what, I think it was, must have been 2014. I'm losing sort of track of my dates. But through Petr Sis, one of his school classmates is the great, was Havel's architect, Bożek Sipek, wonderful glass designer, wonderful artist. And Bożek came up with the idea in 2014 of creating a public art installation in the form of this, two chairs around a table with a linden tree, the national tree of the Czech Republic, in the middle. And what he wanted to do was create a space for democratic dialogue. The seats are at right angles, so the idea is you sit down and you have a discussion with whoever you want to at them, and they're symbolic and important. And the first was put in Georgetown, but I wanted to have the first in Europe, and through my friend who was the Lord Mayor at the time, we jumped at the opportunity, and the first was dedicated by the Lord Mayor and by Karl Schwarzenberg on Human Rights Day in 2014. And since then there are over 10. I'm not saying we weren't responsible, because several of them have been put by the Václav Havel Library in the Czech Republic, but we have been responsible for the ones, when I say we, jointly, Art for Amnesty with the Václav Havel Library, have dedicated one in Barcelona, and we dedicated one in Venice, and then we dedicated one also in The Hague. And there are many more planned.
You're about to unveil a bust of Havel at the Irish Parliament, the Dáil. Well, what's the connection between Havel and Ireland? If he's the only person honoured in this way,
well,
why is he the only one?
I suppose what is sort of special about Havel, and I've said it and sort of said it sort of on a number of occasions, the European Union that we have today, we wouldn't have it without Havel. I mean, it's very hard to say what the straw was that broke the camel's back of sort of communism and the breakup of the Soviet Union. But I think Havel has had a greater influence in the restoration of freedom across Europe than any other single person. And when I proposed it to the Irish Parliament, I mean, there's not, in a sense, a direct connection, although Seamus Heaney, who has recently died and is a revered poet here, everybody knew the strong feeling that Heaney had for Václav Havel. He was our last Nobel Literature Laureate, and the one before that in 1969 was Samuel Beckett. And Beckett wrote 17 plays, very famous ones like Endgame and Waiting for Godot, but a small and lesser known play of his is called Catastrophe, and he dedicated that in 1982 at the time of the Avignon Festival to Václav Havel, who was in prison at that time. And that's the only play of his. So I think when it was pointed out to our parliamentarians that the literary gods of Ireland, Beckett and Heaney, felt so highly about Havel, and then obviously lots of our politicians who would have known him as the president of the Czech Republic and would have known him as a famous dissident in the 70s and 80s, there was really no controversy about it, no sort of debate about it. It just seemed like the right thing to do, and he becomes, as you say, the first non-Irish person to be so honoured. And there's a very clear Czech connection in that the bronze statue was forged in the Czech Republic and designed by, I always get her name on, Maria Sheberova, and she won a competition amongst 20 sculptors to design a bust. But thankfully we get more than one bust out of the mould. The Irish one has been dedicated on the 18th of June, but 2 weeks ago I carried one with me to Mexico, and it was dedicated in the cultural centre of Tlatelolco in the University, the Autonomous University of Mexico. And I have plans for two more, but they're not across the line yet, but you have to watch this space. Havel will be appearing across Europe.
In broader terms, do you feel there's any connection between Irish people and Czech people? Is there any reason that they might get on better than some other nations, perhaps?
I suppose it should be really left to anthropologists and historians to decide that. But I would suspect that the Czechs are the lost tribe of the Celts. I certainly feel a community when I visit Prague. I don't feel as if I'm far from home.
And tell us about your experiences in Prague. Are you there often? What kind of stuff do you do when you're there?
Not often enough, but it's probably the city that I visited most in the last number of years, and I have lots of friends there. I've mentioned Bożek Klipek, Peter Schiss, who doesn't live there but still has a home there. I have probably more friends in the Czech Republic than in Prague than in any other city. It's a hard thing to put your finger on, but when I land there, I feel very comfortable. I feel very happy there. It's a city that's full of history, it's full of culture. It's also probably the only place that has more gory and gruesome statues than Ireland. So maybe you share a sort of common history and some, there's lots of similarities between Ireland and the Czech Republic in terms of our troubled pasts.